Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Experience summer comfort for less. Explore our sale on curtains and bedding. Perfect time to update and freshen your home.
And good afternoon to you.
Hello.
I'm sure here is the last place you want to be this afternoon, explaining the situation in which you find yourself. Maybe take us back to October. And explain how you found yourself in this situation.
Okay. Well, first of all, I would like to say that my husband had his own private AIB account, and we have a joint PTSB account. So that is clear from the start. Last October, he had been recovering from cancer. He fractured a vertebrae in his back and was in Vincent's private in Dublin. He began to show signs of confusion and was diagnosed with moderate dementia. I looked around and I found an excellent nursing home because I realised with the severe health issues he has, I couldn't care for him at home. So I found an excellent nursing home 15 minutes from home, and in late November, he was admitted there. I applied for the Fair Deal scheme, which isn't really very fair and is quite complicated. So several months went by while we were negotiating that. And during that period, I funded his monthly expenses from our savings. In February, March, we finally got a settlement with Fair Deal, and I had to make up the remainder. So I thought I would access my husband's AIB account.
And that's where your current difficulties began?
Yes. I thought if I went to our local branch, I could get my name put on his account. No. I was told I required power of attorney. So I came home, emailed my solicitor, who's excellent. He immediately called me and said that was totally unnecessary. That 2 years ago, a body entitled,
The Decision Support Service, is it?
Decision Support Service, that's correct, was set up specifically to support people like me in my quandary. So he said, it's all online. Now, he said, it can be a little bit difficult to navigate the website. You may need some support. But I did it myself. Took some time, but I managed it. Went through all the documents, made a choice that the option I thought that would be most appropriate for my poor husband would be for me to be an assistant.
Just to explain that, Anne, so the role of the assistant, according to the Decision Support Service, is that you can at all times advise him on decision making and also interact with certain bodies on his behalf.
Yes, and both health, financial, and anything else, yes. So I downloaded all of the documents.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you again, Anne, but just to give listeners an insight into all of the preparation and bureaucratic work, what kind of documentation were you requested to give
The three documents that I downloaded were the decision-making assistant agreement, which declared that my husband wanted me to be his assistant, then the document which was my acceptance of the same, and then a further document that listed from them, this was the first document, this was a notification from the Decision Support Service of who we were, our address, our PPS numbers, etc., etc. And I brought those to the nursing home as required. My husband signed, I signed, they were witnessed. I then brought them home, uploaded them onto the decision-making service, paid the princely sum of €15. So I thought, that's it. Okay. I'm now registered, and I'll go back to the bank.
Okay, now, so all of this has begun in October. He has, from December, is now in the nursing home. We're now up to the month of May.
Yes. I went back to the bank with these documents. They wanted to take them. I fortunately didn't give them. I asked them to photostat them, and they said they would send them to their legal team. So I said, that's fine. I said, how long will that take? And at this stage, remember, Colm, I only wanted my name on his current account. So they said, probably about 2 weeks. I said, okay. 3 weeks passed, nothing. So I called into the bank again. First of all, I was told I hadn't left the documents. I was then told, I was there for about 2 hours, I was then told that, in fact, these were incorrect. Now, in fairness to the woman I was dealing with, she suggested that perhaps we could solve the matter by setting up a direct debit from the account to the nursing home. But I said, I have no idea of what funds are in the account. So the direct debit...
Which is important, because if there aren't available funds and the direct debit ends up coming up empty-handed, your credit rating is affected, which is not something you want to happen. But so you're waiting in the...
I mean, it's very difficult. I'm watching a man I loved with all my heart becoming somebody else, becoming weak and confused at times, not able to walk. It's heartbreaking. And to have to deal with this bureaucracy on my own, it's really very, very unfortunate. So, anyway, this lady then, she suggested perhaps I should contact this group within AIB called Vulnerable Support Team. She gave me a card with her email. I emailed them. Have never received a reply.
No reply.
So I came home. I thought and thought and thought. And I thought, I know what I'll do. We'll close the account. So I went onto the AIB website and was directed that you either call into your local branch, which since my husband is in a wheelchair would be very difficult, or you write to your local branch. So I drafted a letter on my iPad, brought it in, went through it with my husband, and he said, oh yeah, that's fine. Printed it off and he signed it and we posted it. Silence. Then about a week later, and this was just to close the account, to transfer the funds into a PTSD account. And the thing is, it's costing me, including medication every month, just under €3,000, which is a substantial sum of money when you're retired.
€3,000 per month? You are covering these bills, you know, six months at this stage.
Well, it was a lot more before I got some money from Fair Deal.
Right.
It was almost double that. So anyway, but it's still substantial. Anyway, I came home and...
You wanted to close the account.
Yeah. So I thought I'd better check just to be certain that what it says on its website is accurate. So the next day, I went with a letter to my husband. I said, I'm going to ring the Vulnerable Support Team. I rang. I got a young man who didn't seem to know what I was talking about and said, you mightn't be able to close the account. You don't know what kind of account it is. And I said, well, I really don't know. So I didn't know what to do then. Then suddenly I got another email asking me if I could send this person in another branch my mobile number. So I did. And she rang me. And she is the first person that is professional, efficient, kind, patient. So she advised me that we could close the account, and but I said, I don't have an account number or anything. She said, I will order statements and you'll have the amount in the account and your husband's account number. So I said, thank you very much. That's really good. She said, and she emailed me a form called PayLink Euro Payment Application Form, which is something where you can transfer money from one bank to another. I'm not used to that. I do everything online.
Right.
So anyway, I waited, watched the postman going by every day, waited. 3 weeks, Monday of last week, eventually...
What did you get?
I got a statement of account for my husband in triplicate, no original, with a note saying I would be charged. And the last entry on the statement of account was the middle of February.
Right. So you had to get an up-to-date balance on the account.
Yes,
and you got a statement going back to February, which you know, anyway, go on, sorry. And it should be said at this point that you have acted in accordance with the decision support service. You have acted as an assistant, not instead of your husband. You have gone in, advised him of your situation, and you have got his imprimatur, his signature on all of these documents. So everything so far by the book, so far so good, as you thought it.
Yeah, well, I would hope so, because the last thing I would do would show any disrespect to my husband. I love him too much for that. So anyway, the only information I got out of that statement was at least I had his account number. So again, back into the nursing home, drafted a letter, put the account number in, filled in the form for this payment application form in so much as we could, except we couldn't fill in the section that said amount. So I said, would we just say all funds? But of course, that wasn't acceptable, because we needed to have the figures and we need to have it in digits and also in words. So that's, I didn't know. We posted that letter on Friday of last week, and I heard back from the nice lady on Tuesday of this week, explaining why what the latest difficulty was, that because we hadn't filled in the amount, it was null and void. So I said, can you possibly help me in some way? She said, I will speak to my manager. So that was Tuesday. On Wednesday, I just said, damn this to hell. I can't keep going. There must be scores of old ladies and old men out there, just like me, who are trying to cope with the bureaucracy and the digital age that we're living in.
Right. You have managed with, as you say, all of the stress that's involved of seeing the man you love firstly get an unexpected diagnosis of dementia, having survived cancer, have a fall, have mobility issues, source a nursing home, wrangling with Fair Deal to strike the appropriate level of funding in order to fund that situation. And then you're left with a situation where you're paying €3,000 a month, having already paid around €6,000 a month to cover this medication. And on top of all of this, you're dealing with what on the face of it is a simple issue of closing a bank account and transferring the funds to an account over which you had control in order to be able to pay for the care needs of your husband.
His care is so important. And I mean, I have a fair idea from doing my sums of what's in the account. And we're not talking about John Paul Getty or Elon Musk. It's a very modest sum. I don't know why the AIB has to hold their greedy little fingers on it. Well, I paid taxes all my life since I left university, as did my husband. And we bailed out that bank. And really, I get so angry. I'm sorry.
And just, you know, you have the authority of your husband to be his advisor. You've both signed off on that. And at all points, you have got letters of authorization for your husband to access the account. Why was it not possible for them to give you the balance of the account, given that your husband had signed off on a letter for you to close that account?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I mean, I am so meticulous in what I'm doing, that everything that I have my husband sign, I always have it witnessed, so there can be no questions about anything. And I always have a member of staff in the nursing home present with me while I discuss it with my husband, so that she can see that he is understanding, and that she, if I in any way omit something that I should say, that she can supplement that. So at all times, he is the only thing I care about. I just want him cared for. I just want to be able to pay for his care for however long that may be. But as I say, it's not just about me. Other things have happened, Colm. For example, I would advise everybody listening to me that are in a relationship, have joint accounts. For example, I got an angry notification from Ann Post about 6 weeks ago, because my husband's now registered as living in the nursing home, that I owe for the TV license. We haven't had a TV license for years. We've had the household benefits package, but because it was in my husband's name, it immediately transpired.
All right.
So I had to reapply. So everything that's not in joint names is going to cause obstacles.
And to go back to the predicament you're in at the moment, I appreciate, you know, you probably have bills and letters and things that are coming in through the door that every day put a new task on the to-do list. And your concerns are, you know, obviously, as you've said, your husband received his diagnosis in October. We're going on, you know, a considerable time from that now. And you must have concerns that his ability to make decisions with your assistance will diminish over time. But the AIB did get back to us with a statement. They say this is very difficult, they say, and sensitive time for customers and their loved ones. They go on to say the decision support service also provides a number of arrangements that provide for support with decision making, but do not always provide access to accounts. But I suppose that's what they're saying in the statement now. They're saying an enduring power of attorney is a legal arrangement which gives authority to the person you know and trust to make certain decisions in the future and act on your behalf if you lose capacity. But am I right in saying that you have got legal advice independently,
yes,
that the decision,
yes,
support service from your own solicitor, and at,
yes,
at no point after your initial contact with the bank where they suggested power of attorney might be the route to go down, at no point have they told you in the interim that they will not deal with you in the absence of power of attorney?
No.
At all points, you have, as you say, acted in an advisory capacity to your husband and have received witness signatures at all points on the relevant documents?
Always. Always. Even simple letters about anything that he has designed are witnessed. Always. Because I'm so concerned about keeping everything completely legal.
Okay. Now they go on to say, even if someone is caring for one of our customers and there is no legal arrangement or no legal agreement in place, yet we will work through the situation and we will do everything we can to make sure our customer has access to their money. Every customer's situation is unique and we'd be happy to contact the customer directly if they wish to share their details with us. Now, you have had multiple contacts with them. So when you hear them say, even if someone is caring for a customer and there is no legal agreement in place, yet we will work through the situation and do everything we can to make sure the customer has access to money, in your experience so far, is that what you've had to deal with?
No. Not at all. Not at all. That is complete fabrication.
Now,
I don't say that lightly.
Right, I mean, they say their every customer situation is unique. You would hope in your case that it is unique, unfortunate in your situation, but from what you're saying, you wouldn't wish this on anyone else.
No, I would not. It's, as I say, the personal emotional element is quite enough to cope with. Without coping with everything else. And I'm not a young woman. I'm 80 in a few weeks. I don't think, you know, there is an expression, no country for old men. I'm beginning to think Ireland is no country for old people. We used to have an organisation called Council for the Status of Older People. It was subsumed into the Department of Health during the recession and it disappeared. We have a minister for children. We need a minister for older people. We're a growing population.
We do have a minister of state for older people. And actually,
people.
We do indeed. And we just have a statement to hand from them because we were in contact with the Department of Health. And it says, without having knowledge of the exact details of this case, the Decision Support Service would be the best position to offer guidance and support with any queries regarding accessing financial services. If an individual or family are already registered with the service and gives out the office free phone number. So again, you're being pointed to the Decision Support Service, which as a relatively tech savvy individual, you know, you seem to have navigated with relative ease. Would that be fair to say?
Well, I wouldn't say relative ease.
Okay.
It took a while, but I never give up. I'm one of these people that don't ever give up. So I kept going until I got it right. But and who is the Minister for Older People? What's his name?
It's Kieran O'Donnell. It's
From Limerick.
Limerick TD, Kieran O'Donnell. Yeah, he's the Minister of State for Older People. Yeah, so that's the statement we have from the department. So, you know, they say, AIB says they're happy to contact you and to try and progress this, but how do you feel having heard the statement?
I don't really, I don't wish to sound discourteous or disrespectful to anybody. I'll believe anything when I get the money in my hand. Before that, I don't trust them and I don't believe. With the single exception of that one lady who really did seem to know what she was about and to care. But as regards the others, no.
Anne, will you stay with us? Because you have highlighted an important issue and we'd value keeping you on the line if you have the time to stay with us.
I just hope my mobile won't die.
Okay, well, we hope not. If you get a chance to plug it in, maybe you'll be able to hear.
Yeah, no, it's
Sinead.
Okay for now. I've just checked. Okay,
well, good. Do stay
Thank
with
you.
Us, and thanks very much again for your patience and for getting in contact. Sinead, good afternoon to you.
Hi, good afternoon.
You've been listening to Anne there. What's your situation?
So first of all, I mean, Anne, I feel for you because I'm 49. And I've been going through not the same situation, but a similar situation for my father. And absolutely, the number one kind of quality you need is to just not give up. But it takes a huge toll. So my father went into a nursing home 3 months ago. He has dementia. And I suppose over the last few years, we realised that things were, you know, not 100%. And right. So we have gone through the process of myself and my sister are attorneys. And we did it under this new system with the Decision Support Service. And it took so long for it actually to be sort of set up that by the time it was set up, it needed to be enacted. He had lost capacity by that.
I'm very sorry to hear that. I mean, and look, again, for people to come on and talk about, you know, a vulnerable loved one is not where they want to find themselves. So, I mean, we're all the more grateful to you for coming on and highlighting an issue that's, you know, quite personal and obviously not easy.
Yeah, thank you. I suppose you kind of have to go. There's an awful lot to deal with. You know, aside, like Anne said, you know, the emotional side of it, it's hugely, it takes a huge toll on you, but you've got so much logistics and bureaucracy to manage that you just sort of have to set that to one side. So I suppose the issues that I've kind of been working with were, I didn't have the same situation as Anne with the bank. But what the issues that I found with various stakeholders was getting them to acknowledge the validity of the Decision Support Service documentation.
Yes.
And now,
Do you feel it's a situation whereby the Decision Support Service, the penny hasn't fully dropped with institutions as to what the role and legal entitlements are of people who deal with this service? Is that the impression you get?
Well, from speaking to the Decision Support Service, in fairness to the Decision Support Service, everyone that I've dealt with in there has been really helpful. They've done their absolute best to help me. The issue, I think, lies with the various stakeholders. They have not trained their staff. On the ones that are like client-facing staff.
Right. Or if they have, not adequately, in your view.
Well, I'm not sure if they have trained them. If they have trained them, they certainly haven't trained them to, some of them to actually know what this documentation even looks like. So they're referring to parts of the process that are under the old system. So, you know, like getting things certified by solicitors and things like this when
and
that's
look,
no longer.
It is a tricky area. Nobody wants to, I suppose, be a party to a vulnerable older person being exploited. Nobody wants to make it any easier to remove funds from older people under false pretenses. That's clearly not the case, you know, in with anybody who's contacted us here today. Obviously not. Everything, but we've seen the documentation, everything has been done according to the book. Yeah, Anne, sorry, go on.
Colm, could I come in there? Yeah. If you look at all the documentation and if you go through all of the documents on the website, it's almost impossible for someone who's trying to behave in any kind of a fraudulent fashion to get through it. It is really very much a focus on the vulnerable person,
right,
and caring for the vulnerable person. I couldn't praise them enough for the way in which they have structured their documents.
Right. You find that level reassuring, you know, that these precautions are being taken.
Yeah,
I would see for myself, if I'm ever incapacitated, that I would be well protected.
Right, okay. Sinead, sorry, go on. You're
for cutting.
No, not at all, Anne.
I mean, I suppose I've only come into this world in the last few years. I mean, obviously, there must have been instances of vulnerable people being taken advantage of. I mean, I'm not personally aware of them, but I would imagine that sort of thing happens out there. And there must have been, I mean, was there a high level of it in order to trigger this legislation change? However, I would say it's become very, very cumbersome to help your loved one.
And did you ultimately, you've called in because you were listening to Anne. Did you have a situation where you were trying to transfer funds out of a bank account? Did you get that resolved? If so?
So I did get my banking issue resolved. So I contacted my father's bank that I am myself and the other attorney. We're all in the same branch, right? And I said, you know, my father, this is the situation. Here's the documentation from the Decision Support Service. And then I was asked to send in stuff from solicitors and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, sorry, the system has changed. This is under the new system. So I physically had to go into the bank, and I just had to physically go in and kind of, you know, once I managed to get a person that I physically met and they knew who I was and I spoke to them, then yes, I have everything sorted. However, I would say that we have no access to online banking. So everything that I do has to be, you know, I have to physically go into a branch with this form to transfer money and stuff like that. But yes, my current situation with the bank is that I have a point of contact, and he's very nice and he cares. But it's not easy to get that to that stage, you know.
Okay. And actually, you know, for anyone, even on a consumer banking level, it's not easy anymore to go in and engage with somebody face to face on a particular issue you might have.
No.
But I mean, look, that's a question for another day. But it didn't stop with the bank, with you and your father, did you? Did you have, and obviously we won't mention who, but you did have another issue when it came to pension, was it?
Yes. So the type of pension that my father has, I wanted to get advice. Because apparently it's a type of pension. I mean, I know nothing about pensions, but apparently it's a type that you can actually, the family could potentially draw down to fund their care. So I wanted to be in a nursing home now. And like, obviously that's in the back of my mind. Oh my God, what if the money runs out? You know, this sort of thing. So I was back and forth with a particular insurance company. They were refusing to acknowledge the Decision Support Service documentation. And in fairness, I got onto the Decision Support Service and they were extremely helpful and were extremely apologetic. They were then in contact with this insurance company. This all took, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 weeks. I can't even remember now. A number of months this was going on. And then after the decision support service stepping in, and I don't know who they contacted. I received notification via email that this insurance company will liaise with me
right.
to discuss my father's pension. But in the meantime, my father went into the nursing home, and that's been 3 months ago, and I just haven't had the energy to deal with the insurance company. I will go back to them, but...
And keeping up the energy levels, Anne, is something I'm sure you can empathise with. I mean, as usual, in support of anyone calling in, we do the due diligence on the documents and everything else, and you've been good enough to share those with us before we've come on. We've seen emails from you, Anne, to the bank, where you've said, I don't know how much more I can take. I'm totally worn out. I mean, you have clearly communicated the effect that all of this has had on you. Anne?
Me? Yes. Sorry, I was. Yes, utterly. I'm worried about my own health. I'm an asthmatic, and as I say, I'm 80 in a few weeks. And I'm concerned that if it isn't resolved soon, how much longer can I keep going, trying to chase after these faceless people to get what is actually my husband's? I am concerned. I'm very concerned about my health. I don't
absolutely
think...
and I what I would say as well, Anne, is that, like, I'd say we and anyone who's caring for a loved one,
yes,
absolutely, you don't want your loved one to be taken advantage of, 100%. But there comes a point where like you have proven that you are the legitimate relative of this person, and you are not looking to take this money for yourself or anything else. It just, yeah, there seems to be no end to the sort of the checks and balances, and until you give up and go away and don't contact them anymore. That seems
you're right. I think that's what they want to do. I mean, I stated it very clearly one of the occasions I was in the bank. I said, I don't want this money to go off to the Bahamas or to go to hit Brown Thomas and do a big shopping spree. I wanted to make sure that for as long as he's on this planet, that my husband is cared for in a setting that I went to. I mean, I checked so many nursing homes before I was happy with the one I've got him in. And I want him to stay there well cared for and happy for whatever length of time he's got left. And I have to have the funds for that. I don't want it for anything else.
Anne, I'd never describe the situation you're in as fortunate, because, you know, but you did indicate that, you know, you have had a working life of your own and were able to rely on some of your own resources to deal with this situation. But there are a lot of women out there of a similar age to yourself who took time out of the workplace through the marriage bar or anything, or, you know, or other reasons, or were disadvantaged on their pension. Their sole family resources may reside in their husband's bank account. And if they were left in this situation, it would be a further stress heaped on top of that again.
Well, I did see a letter in the or a note in the Irish Times on the Conor Pope column about a woman who'd been recently bereaved. And I identified completely with the problem she was having trying to access her husband's account that was solely in his name, even though she had a death cert and everything to show. And again, she was caught in this dreadful situation. But I'm sure there are some men being caught in it as well.
And how is your husband, Anne? How's he doing?
It's hard. Some days he's better than others. His mobility is receding quite quickly. He now can only walk 2 or 3 steps using the walking frame. And his memory is not great. Now, he still recognises his friends and he recognises his family and the grandchildren and all of that, but he won't remember. His memory is deteriorating, definitely. And he was a press photographer all his life, and now he can't even lift his camera, which is sad.
That's an awful blow, and for you to see somebody with such creative talent unable to even the tools of his trade anymore is very tough.
Our house is full. I'm looking around me here in the living room with all of his photographs taken all over the years. he won many prizes for his photographs. And I think it's so sad. And I look at his cameras and everything. But anyway, if I can just keep him well in nursing home, that's all I want.
All right. And look, you've used your voice to try and raise awareness about it. And hopefully this will come to some conclusion. But do absolutely keep us posted, Anne. And thanks for raising it. And Sinead, thanks for you.
Thank
How's
you.
Your own I'm dad good. Keeping, Sinead?
And good luck, Sinead. I'm going to go now. Thank you, Colm.
Okay. Bye, Anne.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, my father's doing okay. He's in a similar enough situation. I didn't hear all of the beginning of Anne's thing. So, but yeah, I mean, he knows that he has myself and my sisters, you know, to stand up for him and to fight for him. So he's, I guess, one of the lucky ones. So yeah,
okay.
I really would feel for any older person who would have to do this on their own, you know.
Okay. Well, look, we wish him well, and indeed you and your sister as well. Mind yourself. We're going to take a quick break. We're back in a minute.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
Colm O'Mungoyne here, 087 484 8888 for your WhatsApps. Colette, good afternoon to you.
Hello, how are you?
How's the visitor?
Well, we still have him. He did go for a little while and now he's back.
Okay, tell us, who is the visitor?
It's a pigeon. His name is Woody.
Right. And he's called Woody why?
We called him Woody because he's in Woody's yard in Glasnevna.
Well, he came in looking for a length of 2x4, did he?
Well, he came in for something all right. Now, we did give him a tiny bit of food outside, but that was it.
Right. And he flew into the yard or came in into the interior?
He came in. He was in the warehouse and he came out then. But he's not budged. He's still there. But he's tagged and we have his number. So we reckon, like, if someone owns him, he's a homing pigeon.
Okay. And did you manage to catch him?
No.
Right, so he's there. He's with you. He came in and had a quick look around. First of all, had a browse. Maybe went somewhere else and
had some food.
Did a bit of a price comparison, but he came back
exactly.
to you anyway.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
Yes, he's
right.
here. So he just seems. I don't know whether it's odd that they stick around for this long. So we were thinking of ringing a pigeon club, but they're not open till later. So being, you know, part of a team that love animals.
But what are you feeding him?
What did you feed him? A little bit of bird food.
Bit of bird food, very good. Well, you have, of course, you have it on hand in the store for the outdoor feeding and the like. Now, we did post a picture of Happy Woody on X.
Okay.
Yeah, he's you've managed to see the tag on his ankle, have you?
Yes.
Right. So, do you know what the number is? What can you tell us about that? Go on, call it out there.
I can tell you the number. It's A17835.
And you think he's a racing pigeon or a homing pigeon, do you?
Well, he's tagged, so.
Yeah, is he friendly?
Yes, very friendly.
Okay, whatever about a homing pigeon. He's a home improvement pigeon, maybe. You might say.
Well, yeah. Come to Woody's.
Yeah, but he hasn't found his way home.
No, and we were just thinking, find his owner. My friends, Anna and Kira.
Okay.
Noticed him first.
Okay, his owner may not want him back if he doesn't find his way home. But anyway, we have to presume the best about him. A17835 is Woody's number.
17835.
Okay,
yeah.
that's Woody's number. 087-484-8888 is anyone's number if they want to get in touch with us. Jerry, you also have maybe not such a good interaction as the bird
story.
No,
we wouldn't be naming these birds Woodies or anything like that. They don't have any tags on the end of their claws or anything. But
they do have something in common with Woody anyway. They're hanging around. In your case, more than you'd like.
Possibly, yeah.
Okay.
I would say a lot more. I mean, we'd prefer it all right. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
tell us what's going on.
Well, Colm, this has been going on for quite a long time and it actually has increased in the last, well, this year anyway. We're absolutely plagued with these seagulls as I told your researcher earlier, we live along the sea here out on the Skerries Road, just in Balbriggan here, and we have, I'd go as far as say, it's a colony of seagulls sitting on possibly three or four rooftops just in the same area, and hardly any of the other houses in the estate have these birds. They have their babies there and they're squawking and squealing for, I would say, 24 hours a day. You might get a respite for an hour when the mothers or the fathers go out to sea to fish for their young ones. But it's. I sent in videos. I don't know if you saw them yourself with your researcher.
Well, map it out there for the listeners. Tell us. Give us it in all its technicolor glory, although sadly it's not really technicolor. It's mostly black and white you're dealing with.
It's black and white or grey and white, yeah. I mean, they're just all night long. Nobody can get a sleep. I don't believe the people in our estate, every one of them are wearing earmuffs or anything like that. It's actually crazy.
And is it just the people in the houses that are, you know, where they're roosting on the roof? Is it just those that are affected by it, or is everybody hearing them?
Oh God, no.
Everybody, right?
No, it's stereo system here. It's just reverberating through the whole estate. It's absolute madness. And I know you're busy yourself there, but if you got a chance to see one of the videos sent in, because again, I'm not going to mention the person's name from, he wasn't with Birdwatch Ireland, but he was with Fingal Services.
Right.
And
yeah, don't identify him. Yeah, go on.
No, I definitely will not, out of respect for that guy, because he was a nice fella that came out. He actually came out to see me. And I showed him the videos because he asked me, would you be able to send me a few videos on? I got up at 1 o'clock in the morning. They were going crazy. Their young ones have come down onto the street, onto the road, and they can't get back up in the roof. So that's one aspect of it. And then I did one at 6 o'clock in the morning because I had nothing else to do, Colin, because I was awake all night.
Right.
So I did that one, and that was like, there was about, and I'm not exaggerating, had to be 30 or 40 squealing and this mad, crazy shrill all around their estate. And I challenge anyone to say that they had a good, decent night's sleep that day. I did a video. Nobody's getting sleep with them. And
you know, it's seagulls. Are they keeping themselves to themselves, or are they in and out of the bins? Are people having ice cream cones or pizza slices or that robbed out of their hands?
No. We don't have any shops in our estate. But I'll tell you what's happening, Colin. A lot of people have small dogs or any type of dog. And if they walk, that you can come through our estate from another estate called Fancourt Heights. You can come through there to come down onto the beach where we're closer to the beach here on the green. And if they're walking down with their dogs, minding their own business, these dogs are not doing that. The seagulls, the daddies and the mammies are coming down and swooping right down and releasing whatever's inside them on top of the person and the dog.
They're dive bombing them.
Dive bombing them, yes, and you know, painting them level with some white colouring, whatever, as you know yourself, right?
Right, and what's the aim like?
It's fairly good, I tell you one thing, I don't want to say that they'd be like these, you know, precision aircraft bombers,
right.
But yeah, it's very good, you know, they're getting the dogs, they're getting the person. The cars are destroyed. None of us, most of us are every day cleaning the bird do off the cars. And if you don't take it out, if you leave it for a day or two, it's congealed onto the car. So it's actually getting into the paintwork. Some people will not let their children out. Now, our estate is an aging estate. So the children of the parents of us are bringing their kids up, they won't bring the kid. They won't let the kids out for fear of them being, if they had a sandwich in the hand, the gulls would be down in a second and take it from them, you know. Oh, honestly, yeah.
Just like, brazen behaviour.
Yeah, they're very aggressive, Colin. And we've gone to Birdwatch Ireland, and I don't mind mentioning that because we've got no satisfaction. And all they're telling us now that they're a protected species. They're on the red species list.
What does that mean?
What do you mean by that? He says that they're a dwindling population.
Now, but
we just happen to have a large
proportion of the dwindling population sitting on the roof.
Population.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when did this start? I mean,
years ago. Yeah.
How new is the estate?
Oh, God, it's here 40 years now.
Right.
This is going on. Now, I know they're seabirds and we're actually sitting on the sea here, right? So, in technically, someone say, well, they have a right to be there. Yes, but we've a right to live as well, Colin. We have a right to get a good night's sleep. There must be some solution to it, a humane solution to it. But I was asking the guy who had more information than I had, and he said that they come back to the same place forever and ever. with their young ones, and then the young ones come back to the same place to nest all the time.
All right, but you're not allowed. So when did this phase of it begin? You know, when would you say it got measurably worse?
About 5 weeks ago.
5 weeks ago, right?
Yes, and we had, so you can imagine 5 weeks of listening to this. We've just become so used to it. You know, you can hear us, and it's just absolute madness. You know. And nobody seems to have a solution for it. And that's why I said I get on to live line to see somebody might suggest. Now, I'm not going to listen to anyone saying, oh, just kill them and this. You can't do that, you know. And you're not allowed to remove their nests during nesting season or any time. It's illegal to remove their nest. This is the law, and you can't do that.
Not received anyway any expert advice to your satisfaction?
No, expert advice. The chap was lovely who came out, Colm, but he couldn't offer me anything now. And another neighbour was with me, and he said, but look, so you can't offer us any help. And he said, I'm sorry, but, you know, this was new to him as well. When I sent the videos on, it's something he said he never saw before either. So if you get a chance yourself, Colm, I don't know if you got a chance to see them, just have a look at a few of them as well. And I don't think you'd be coming into RTE early in the morning because you wouldn't be getting a night's sleep, to be honest with you, you know?
Yeah, and Camir, do you have any insight into why it got worse? I mean, have there always been some seagulls there on roofs for years and then it got worse in the last 5 weeks? All of a sudden, I do.
Whatever it is, and I want to protect these people's privacy. There's three houses opposite us that they seem to be congregating on, these same three houses all the time. And at one, there's about nine on one roof. So it's like squatters, if you like. So one family's after subletting their apartment out to someone else and another family. So there's nine
on
one roof.
Have you had any insulation work done in your attic in the recent past?
No,
I haven't. Could it be that, you know, although it's not the right time of the year for it, really, is it? I mean, if it was the winter and people had less well-insulated houses, you might think they'd be attracted to the warmth, but it's in the middle of summer, insofar as there's any heat generated in the summer here at the moment. So it wouldn't seem to be that, would it?
No, it's just a connection to the sea. And like that guy said, when they nest on a roof and they're undisturbed, they'll keep coming back there all the time. And they're young that fully fledged, they'll come back. And it's on and on and on. And so I asked the guy, which was the key question, how do you break the cycle? And he says, you can't. He said, you can't. So he says, first of all, you can't take the nest down. They're protected species.
It sounds like a medieval curse at this stage.
Exactly. And so when do you know that they're coming back? So all of a sudden, we'd all be asleep. And next morning, you hear two herring gulls sitting on the roof. And they're going around and they're taking bits off the ground to build their nest. And before you know it, there's a fully made-up nest there on the roof.
Did you ask around in the estate, did anyone slap a leprechaun or, you know...
No, they didn't.
Are you on an ancient burial site? I mean, I'm going through all the usual cliches that incur curses.
I've knocked on all the doors, Colm, and I think they're all fast asleep because they're exhausted from not getting sleep. So even during the day, there's nobody there. They're obviously absolutely exhausted. So I don't know what the solution is.
Right.
I just thought I'd reach out to Lifeline and see, does anybody have a suggestion as to what we could do about it, you know?
Okay, serious suggestions and legal suggestions,
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. No, I'm not interested in the double-barrel shotgun carry on, just no. Okay. I'll just blow them off the roof. You're going to get a lot of that, but
okay.
You can't do that, you know?
All right, thanks very much, Jerry. We'll take a break.
Colm,
we're back in a minute. Not a worry, thanks for calling.
Yeah,
thanks a million.
Thank you.
Lifeline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
Siobhan, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, how are you?
2023 and you were signing up for the Warmer Homes Scheme. Tell us why and what happened.
Well, the Warmer Homes Scheme was advertised and it seemed a great scheme for to upgrade houses and to help people lower electricity bills and things in houses. So my sister lost both our parents and she was in the home house and there was a lot of work to be done to it. So we were delighted when we heard about the Warmer Home Scheme and we applied for it on her behalf so that we could upgrade the house.
And it's for, you know, older and vulnerable people to apply to as well, and that's why you yeah. applied to it on behalf
that's
of your
why
sister.
We applied, yeah. Yeah, you had to. There was certain things you had to meet, and she was on disability, and she would have some special needs. So we knew that she qualified. So okay. we applied for it on that.
So in the sad circumstances in which she found herself, and condolences, both your parents died within 6 months of each other, was it?
Yeah, within 6 months of each other. And she had lived with them all her life, and she liked being in the house. And we knew we'd need a lot of work done to the house. And she wanted to stay in her own area, in her own environment, you know, where she had very good neighbours, people that would help out. And we thought it was ideal to apply for the scheme for her.
Okay. So, sorry to hear about her loss and indeed your loss yeah. as well.
Thank you.
The house, as you say, old house and a cold house as well. That's why you were applying for it. So
it was a very cold house. There was very little insulation in it, and it was old, and we knew that there would be a good bit of work. There was no oil in it, there was an old range in it, and there was a few radiators off it.
Okay, so you went about the application in October 2023, was it? Tell us what happened.
Yeah, so in October 2023, I contacted them, and I just asked a few things, and it sounded good, and it sounded perfect. So I went ahead and I got the application and I filled it out with my sister. We went down and went through it all and we sent off the application. I didn't hear anything for a few weeks and I contacted them and they said they hadn't received it. So I had to get a new application and then I filled out the second application. You send it to Cara Savine in Kerry and I sent off that. And then my sister got a letter to say it was rejected. And I couldn't understand
the second one, is it?
The second application. And then when I contacted them, they told me that they had found the first application.
Okay, so the first application from October 2023, they were now yeah. going with this application.
Yes.
Okay.
So they went ahead. Now, at the time, we were told 8 months for the BAR rating to be done in the house. Now, this was October 23. So this went on. And every time you'd ring, you'd be told 10 months. 11 months, 12 months. So the months kept going on for the BAR assessor and we just kept ringing and ringing and trying to get it put through. We had already found out that if your house was a very low rating, that you should be prioritised, that they would help you.
And the rating and the rating in your parents' house, it's an old house, cold as you say. So what rating,
yeah.
what rating would it have had?
G. It was a G. It was one of the lowest ratings you could have. Which we knew it would be, but we thought in our favour. We had moved our sister out a few times in between waiting for this. She had been with my other sister. She had been with me because the house was too cold. So when the BAR assessor came out and we were told it was G, we were delighted. We said,
when,
OK.
When did they eventually come out?
They came out just before December, around the 9th of December 2024.
Right, so over a year after your initial application.
Over a year after the application. So then when the BAR assessor comes out, that report is given to you and then it moves on to a surveyor has to come out. So we were thinking it wouldn't be too long and we rang and rang and eventually we got a surveyor to come out and do it.
And they came out when?
They would have come out in March right. time to do it. And when he came out in March, and I have to say they were all very nice to deal with, when he came out in March, he did the assessment on the house and he told us that the rules on the, he actually said to us, the rules have changed since January the 1st. It is now more environmental and you're not allowed to put in oil anymore into these houses. It has to be heat pumps. So basically he said our house wasn't fit for anything because it was an old house. So a heat pump wouldn't be sufficient in the house. So that we were entitled to nothing. And we were shocked. And actually, my sister did ask him, can we appeal it? He did tell us it would be the same thing. The rules had changed.
Right. And the rule in question is there's an EU regulation that forbids them to install fossil fuel-based heating systems.
Yeah. Yeah, after the 1st of January, that rule came in.
The 1st of January 2025.
Yeah, that came in that they weren't allowed. So I then went on to say to him that, you know, because the house was G-rated, it should have been prioritised. We shouldn't have been waiting that long. If the survey stage had been done in December, we would have been entitled to the fossil fuel and it was very unfair. And he didn't have that information. He did not know that the house should have been prioritised because it was a G rating. So he checked it out and he did come in and he apologised and he said, yes, that the house should have been prioritised. But it still left us in limbo. And I contacted loads of politicians. I contacted TDs. Firstly, in 2023-24, when the Green Party were in government, I contacted all of the offices and asked them, and every one of them said they'd help. But I couldn't get any information or help of any of them, just that this was the way it was.
Right.
We contacted Europe because the money was coming from Europe, and we contacted TDs out there. And the same thing, when you contact them, they do their best. But then it was the same generic letter from everyone, like Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Sinn Féin. We're at the stage now that we've actually gone to the ombudsman. I haven't heard from them since May, but I actually had to get a form for me to look after my sister's affairs through them. So that's the stage we're at, but right. It's been horrific.
So, I mean, we know, our colleague Paul Cunningham in the newsroom reporting this morning that the commitment given by the last government to spend $2 billion of retrofitting residential homes by the year 2030 is now under review. It's not quite clear what that end figure would be. And the SEAI say they've spent more than $1.4 billion to support over 213,000 home energy upgrades. And they have almost 28,000 fully funded upgrades for houses under the warmer home scheme. So we don't know what the ultimate 2030 figure will be that'll be spent on it. But there's considerable amounts of money have been spent on it so far. But it wasn't done in time for you to get in before this new European ruling came in.
No, and I would have presumed we applied for this scheme and we met the criteria in October 2023. So I would have presumed we would still be entitled to it, even if the circumstances changed, because we had applied on that criteria. And I did appeal it on that, you know, that in 23 we applied and we should be still allowed it under that criteria.
So, I mean, you accept that this European rule is in place. You've heard that back from MEPs across all parties. You can see that their hands are tied for applications post January 1st, 2025. Yeah. But your argument is that your application should be treated retrospective to October 2023 and taken as something that came in before January 1st when this rule came into effect.
Yeah, and in fairness to the surveyor, when he came out, he told us that day that if we put in the oil and stuff ourselves and paid for it ourselves, that then we could reapply and they might be able to give us something else because we would be bringing the energy grade of the house up. So basically, they can't do it. They won't put it in. It's an EU ruling. We can put it in ourselves and pay for it ourselves. And then we could apply again. But why would you apply again when you were waiting since October 23 till March, April 25?
And is there any other scheme that could be applied to, you know, is there anything else you could apply to?
He actually did tell us that day that we could go down the route of applying for a county council grant, that there is grants available. But when I contacted the SEAI, I said to them, why would we have to do that when we applied for a scheme that was for vulnerable people with disability, people on social welfare, to improve their life, to bring down their bills, you know, to help them, and then be told, apply to the county council? There was funding there from the SAI for that, so why would we apply? Like, county councils don't have that much money either to be looking after what they have to do.
So what are you going to do?
Well, we've appealed it now with the ombudsman, and that's where it is. I did appeal it twice. I was actually quite surprised because I found the 20-something months absolutely just heartbreaking, trying to get answers, trying to get them to do it. And then I appealed it at 2:30 on a Friday, and I got a phone call at 3:30 to say my appeal had been rejected.
And sorry, and that appeal was to who? The SEAI, was it?
Yeah, to the SEAI. In 1 hour, they had they had told me it was rejected, and I was thinking, in 1 hour they can reject it, and I'm waiting 20-something months even trying to get surveys done.
So you're off to the ombudsman now. How long do you think that'll take?
We don't know. We don't know. We haven't heard anything since May, since they got permission for me to act on my sister's behalf. That was the last email I got of them in May. But the way I look at it is, if people are going to be treated like that, why would anyone be applying for it? And I would have thought that people that it was advertised for should be the ones that's looked after.
Okay.
And maybe they should really, I did say to them that they should clarify it better on their sites, because there was two or three things that wasn't on the site at all that I'd be ringing them up asking them.
Okay.
And they'd say, oh yeah, we'll take it on board.
All right, well, look, Siobhan, do keep us posted and let us know how you get on whenever that comes to a conclusion with the Ombudsman.
Yeah.
And thanks very much for calling us on that. We'll take a break. Back in a minute.
Lifeline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
Message just in from the Irish Homing Union, not by carrier pigeon, I should stress, but it's going back to Woody, the pigeon who landed in a branch of Woody's DIY that we heard about earlier, who doesn't look in a hurry to go anywhere, having initially visited and then gone away again and then come back. The Irish Homing Union says, if you wish to provide food and water for the bird, give bird seed or crushed cornflakes, some water in a deep dish. Don't give bread to a racing pigeon. And then it goes on to say, once the racing pigeon has been fed and watered, a bit like a pit stop, it usually continues its journey home. Please remove the source of any food after a maximum of 48 hours or when it starts to fly, after which it can find its own food and water. A racing pigeon may continue to stay in the same location for 7 to 10 days, roosting on trees or in roofs. It won't complete the last part of its homeward journey. Its food is readily available via bird tables or feeders, so it's best to clear the decks. After 2 days, or if a pigeon is injured or shows signs of distress, it may be necessary to contain the bird in a cardboard box or a small animal carrier to protect it from other predators. It'll prevent any injury to the bird and prevent it flying away. So there's top tips if a homing pigeon lands anywhere in the vicinity and looks like it's hanging around and can't find its way home. Paul Gaffney, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Colin. I enjoy your Sunday programme.
Oh, thanks very much.
I was listening to that lady having the problem with the banks.
And you find it, without mentioning the name of the bank you were dealing with, you found yourself in a similar situation.
Absolutely.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah. But my advice would be to contact the financial ombudsman, and I'll tell you the reason why. I'm 92 years of age and I'm almost blind. My eldest boy was on my account, a joint account on my current account, for the reasons I just mentioned, that because of my eyesight, I wasn't able to do things properly. But he died in 2022.
All right. God, I'm sorry
and
to
I
hear that, Paul.
And I went to the banks to get the current account, the joint account transferred to my youngest son, Keith. And the amount of trouble I got off that bank was unbelievable. I actually went in personally, originally, after Edmund's funeral. And as I told you, I'm almost blind. And what they told me was that they wrote out a list of instructions for me for to go online and do it online. Now, I was standing in a branch of that bank. And they told me that a guy whose eyesight was almost gone, I've only about maybe 10% of my eyesight left. And in addition to that, I made numerous phone calls. I made actually 12 different phone calls to 12 different departments in the bank, trying to get a bit of satisfaction or trying to get the thing regularised, and couldn't. And eventually I got so frustrated, I got onto the financial ombudsman. And within 1 week of me getting onto the financial ombudsman, the whole thing was sorted out. And I got €1,000 compensation from the bank.
For the trouble.
Yeah. A lady from the head office rang me and apologised abjectly to me. And was very sorry for all the trouble and problems I was put through in view of my age and so forth, etc. And told me that they were going to lodge an extra €1,000 into my account. But the problem, the trouble I went through for to try and get that done. And eventually I had to go to the financial ombudsman. And I tell you one thing for free, Colin, he got it done double quick. God bless him, whoever he is. He has my prayers every night.
And you say you went in, you know, very close. Was it close to nearly on shortly after your son Edmund's funeral?
Yeah, yeah, I did. And this is what they gave me, this list of instructions written out on a piece of paper. He actually wrote it out longhand for me there and then, what to do online. And I said it to him. I said, do you realise, he says, I'm almost blind. I said, I don't even have a computer. Well, he said, that's the system. He just threw it to me, you know.
And what about your son, Keith? He's on the account now, is he? He's
Pardon?
Your other son, Keith, your surviving son, Keith, he helps you now with the banking, does he?
He does, yeah. He does it all for me. But I find, by and large, that these large institutions, the respect they have for their customers nowadays is minimal. And another one I had problems with, no end of problems with, was the HSE. And another institution I had no end of problem with was the Garda Síochána.
All right,
And particularly since they introduced these automatic phones, press one for this and two for that and three for the other, you get run around the house. It's unbelievable.
You want to deal with real people. But anyway, look, the best phone call you got from a real person was the phone call that came through from the bank's head office telling you.
That was from this lady. She told me, I can't remember her name now, it's 3 years ago.
Right, well, we wouldn't mention it in there. It's what you might call a grand outcome in what they were offering you.
Yeah, I was so glad to get the whole thing set up that I wasn't even looking for money. I wasn't looking for compensation. I was just wanted the thing set up.
But anyway, the Financial Services Ombudsman is the place to go if you find yourself, in your view, in a similar situation. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right, Paul, thanks very much for sharing that with us.
Not at all. You're very welcome.
Thanks a million. Look after yourself. Quick break, back in a minute.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, 0818 715 815.
Colette Lawler's back. You're picking up habits from Woody there, Colette, are you? You're back with us. We have you on the line anyway to hear some potential expert advice here. Michael Feeney, good afternoon to you.
I wouldn't say it's expert advice, but a little bit. If the pigeon can be contained, we can find out who the owner is very, very easily. Very, very easily. Yeah. The numbers seem to be related to the Royal Pigeon Racing Association. The A letter seems to be that way.
Right.
But it's very easy to find the owner once we have the full number.
So A17835, that would indicate to you that that's a UK pigeon, is it?
Not necessarily UK, Northern Ireland as well. But there's two letters before that, GB probably, and there will be a year 22, 23, 21, 24, 25, whatever it is.
Okay.
But if the pigeon is contained, it's easy to find out who it is.
And pigeon's contained, how they've, you know, Colette was saying they've been feeding the pigeon but haven't been able to handle it so far. So how would you advise getting up close enough to be able to handle the pigeon and read the serial number?
If they're in Woody's and they've been feeding it, keep feeding it and set up like an upside down washing basket or something like that with a stick on it and a string. And as soon as it goes into the basket to catch it, you know, pull the twig and the string away or whatever it is and it's contained, then you can read the full ring number. And then it's easy to find the owner because you can't find it. We can't get it back to its owner if it's not contained.
Okay. But if
it's contained, it's easy.
And can you find the owner online by just entering in the serial number or do they have to contact?
You may not find the owner online, but what will happen is that once she puts the number into the automated system on the website, it will contact the owner because she will put in contact details for herself.
Okay. And what is the website, Michael?
Well, for that one, I would say it's the Royal Pigeon Racing Association, the RPRA. So it's a UK website, obviously governing Northern Ireland as well. I'm only guessing because of the letter A that it is a UK number.
All right.
And I had one here recently from the UK that was raced from France into the UK and actually the wind blew it over here. So we got it back to its owner over there recently, like, you know.
Yeah, do you raise pigeons yourself?
I do, yeah. I've been on Liveline before around it. It's a fantastic hobby. Keeps me busy morning, noon and night.
Right. Okay. Colette, what do you think of that? Are you going to set up the old Tom and Jerry routine with the basket and the stick and string?
Look, I prefer a professional. Like, we make the call to try and find the owner. I thought with the serial number, that would be all we needed. Now, I'm not there at the minute. And he's sitting in the yard, like he's not in the shop.
Yeah.
Okay.
He did come in the yard
as well.
Okay. All right, Colette.
He's sitting on the gutter, you know.
We'll do our best to get back